Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. The wellness world is full of noise. Every week, there's another influencer's social media post, persuasive podcast, or article about some tiny, obscure study that claims to have unlocked the secret of life. And the wellness industrial complex promises quick fixes all the time to improve our health and extend our lives in exchange for a lot of our time and money. But what if the real key to living well doesn't rest in fads or new extreme remedies, but a simpler approach? And what if those most important keys to living well don't cost you a dime? Joining us today is Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, one of the nation's leading doctors, bioethicists, and health policy experts. And he brings a refreshingly positive, evidence-based antidote to the wellness hype. In his new book, Eat Your Ice Cream, Six Simple Rules for a Long and Healthy Life, Dr. Emanuel distills decades, really centuries of research into six clear strategies for longer, healthier, and happier living, right when we need it most. Dr. Emanuel, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Early in your book, there's a line that sets a great tone for the guidelines that follow. You say, remember the first rule of life. We're all going to die. You can waste all your time trying to extend your life by a few minutes, obsessing over scores of adjustments to your diet or exercise routines, or you can follow six straightforward, smart wellness behaviors and make the time you have healthier and more meaningful. So let's jump right in with your core recommendations. What are the six pillars that you outline in your book?
Well, the first one is don't be a schmuck, which basically means don't do stupid stuff, don't take unreasonable risks, don't ignore very well-established advice, such as don't smoke, don't vape, don't avoid your vaccines, whatever RFK Jr. says, do your cancer screening tests, and then don't take unnecessary risks like base jumping or climbing Mount Everest or things like that. The second one is more unusual, which is, and probably less well known to most people, which is engage in social relationships, both close social relationships with close friends and family, but also what are called weak ties or weak social connections with, you know, some of the Uber driver with you, the barista, someone you happen to be sitting next to on a train and things like that. Those social relations are more important. They're the most important thing for health, longevity, and happiness. We tend to downplay them. Our society is going in the wrong direction. We're actually getting more lonely, eating more meals alone. But they're the most important thing you can do. The third rule is keep mentally engaged. For many people, the worst thing is dementia and not being there, but living. And you have there, a lot of that's determined by genes, but a lot of that is also open to modification by things you do like exercise, like engaging in more activities and purposeful activities after you retire. The fourth is eat well. The basis of that is stop eating the junk. And we have a lot of junk in our food ecosystem in America, which is why we're the most, we're very obese. We eat more ultra-processed foods than any other high-income country. The second part of that is don't drink sodas. They are empty calories, 140 per 12-ounce can. But then there's the positives. Eat more fermented food, whether it's yogurt or cottage cheese or Gouda and Alpine cheeses or kimchi. Those are all very good for the microbiome, and the microbiome, as we're learning more and more about it, is critical to health. And then there's also more fiber. If I had to say one thing, 93% of Americans don't get enough fiber. You got to eat fiber. It's a prebiotic, good for, again, the microbiome. So all of that is eating well. The second to last is, again, nothing surprising to people, exercise. And you got to do the three kinds of exercise. You have to do aerobic exercise to get the heart up and the breathing hard, muscle strengthening, and then last, balance and flexibility. And you shouldn't shortchange one for the other. And the last thing is to sleep well. And this is the biggest challenge for all of us. Americans are not sleeping well. And it's the one of the six recommendations you cannot will. You get to bed and you will yourself, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to sleep. And of course, it's counterproductive. I had that experience last night. For some reason, I was up for, between 11 and 2 in the morning, and it took me a while to get to sleep. I don't know what was bothering me. There's nothing really pressing. So, but those are the six.
Okay, thank you so much. I just hate it when we launch into a bunch of things and we never get around to the meat of the discussion. So I wanted to make sure
Thank
we
you.
for sure got those
Thank
in.
you.
You're welcome. So the book is terrifically friendly to read. It's very
Thank you.
conversational. You share lots of great examples and vignettes of situations that people had with you. One of the things that comes up a lot is just the type of interactions that you have that's served as persuasive or not. And many people only start thinking about their health when they feel it slipping away, right? Or when they have a serious illness come into their life. What do you think the most effective way is to get people, even people who feel very healthy at the moment, to adopt healthier approaches before things get rough?
Well, you're actually pointing out something really, really important, that wellness has got to be a habit. You're going to be doing it for not just years, but really decades, the rest of your life. And you should start early. For example, being cognitively intact, postponing dementia. One of the most important things you can do is get a lot of education now, not wait until later. Because if you start from a higher baseline, more neural connections, more neurons that haven't died, the decline, which is going to be inevitable, will happen later. And the same thing goes for lots of other things. Getting active now, eating well now, means you won't get obese, means that you will have a lot of muscle reserve and aerobic reserve. But most importantly, starting early means it's these wellness activities become a habit. They move into the background of your life. You just do them without having to think about them, without having, it's like, brushing your teeth. You don't have to think about it. It just happens every day. For my wife and I, we do 20 minutes of yoga every morning, and it's just part of the habit. And we feel poorly if you don't get a chance to do that yoga because you're traveling or something else. And that, I think, those habits happen when you start doing them early, and then they just become part of the life and you forget about it. And similarly, it's very unlikely you're going to learn how to cook well in your 60s if you haven't started early. And lots of people ask me, well, when did you start? I said, I started like most people. I moved out of the house. I went to college. And then once I left college and I was on my own living in an apartment, I learned to cook. And then it became fun, and I learned how to make more dishes and refine things and actually become more aware of the ingredients I was using. And actually, I'll tell you, when we go to Italy or Greece or Spain, we spend some time thinking, well, let's go and taste a lot of olive oils, and we'll get some really interesting olive oils to bring back. Or we're about to go, I've got to do some lectures in New Zealand, thinking about their special honey and their medicinal honey. And it's like, yes, the moment you begin to think about these various parts, you begin to incorporate them into your life in many different ways. Also, when we're in New Zealand, we're going to go biking and kayaking to do the exercise bit of it as well.
And maybe go up to those hot springs and get some minerals from their fantastic hot springs while you're there. It'll be exciting.
Yes.
You bring up an interesting tone, which is that you seem to enjoy your healthy practices. How important is it to actually like the things that are hopefully making you healthier and live longer?
Well, I think that's a super important point for two reasons. One, a lot of current wellness advice, a lot of the influencers there are sort of trying to get you to engage in self, denial and deprivation and suffering. If you're going to do something for decades, you're not going to do it if you're suffering and if it's constant self-denial. And we know those kind of things fail. First of all, they require a lot of willpower every time you have to do it if you're loathing it. Second, we know that willpower is limited. It fatigues. We know this because New Year's resolutions, 80% of them are done within weeks. We also know that if a diet requires you to constantly work at it and to ignore foods you like, you're just not going to stick to it. And we know most people fail at their diets precisely because it's all about self-denial. In my view, wellness is not about self-denial. It is much more about joy, living well. This weekend, I went out and went bike riding for 40 miles. You know, it's fun. It's beautiful. You're out in nature. You're pedaling. You're breathing hard, but it's like a blast. Similarly, you know, if you're cooking dinner, you're having people over for dinner, you know, getting a recipe right, and then having a great conversation with them, having them enjoy the food. You know, I made a flourless chocolate cake this weekend, and the others were like, this is really great. It's dense. It's not too sweet. It's, you know, it makes you feel good as well. And it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah. I like the example you give of when you go to Italy or somewhere and you're trying all the olive oils, because there is this element of personal likes or dislikes. Find the thing. My husband is a big mountain biker. He's a big skier. He likes adrenaline rich, vigorous sports. I am a much kind of a calmer person. I'm looking for Pilates and for yoga, cross country skiing, things that are a little smoother, but it makes us both happy doing the things that we do. And I kind of feel like that's the trick, right? Exploring enough until you find your sport or you find your food or you find your thing that is both healthy and makes you feel good.
100%. Because look, just take exercise. There's a wide range of exercises you can do that are going to be good, that both are aerobic, strength training, and, you know, find the one you like. Maybe it is hiking. Maybe it is downhill skiing. You know, your husband and me and my wife are pretty similar, which is I like downhill skiing. I like that adrenaline rush. I'm not terribly good at it, but I like it. She likes the cross country, the gliding, the balance. We both are willing to do the others, but, you know, it's much more fun when you do the one you really, really like. Fortunately, we both like bicycling, so.
Perfect, yeah, and that's got the gliding and the vigorous qualities to it. That's really nice. I was a rower in college and that had that sense too. It was exciting, but it was also smooth. Let's talk about this. In this age of constant information overload, often from unqualified sources, physicians and experts are in this tough spot when instructing patients on how to get healthier. How do you balance the challenge of telling them what you know from studies and experience to be the best approaches for optimal health with the realities of what you believe they actually will do or not do?
That is a fantastic question. And I will tell you that two things. The first is that almost every physician who's seen the book, read the book, it's like, phew, someone is taking on all those influencers spouting nonsense. It's like, you know, I go to every medical meetings and everyone is like really appreciative. Someone is actually taking on that nonsense. The other is one of the reasons I wrote the book is because people come to me constantly asking for advice, whether it's on a diet or exercise or other factors. What sleeping pill should I take? And I wanted to have in one place what I think is relatively short. It's less than 200 pages and entertaining, so it's easy to get through, but has all the information you need. Now, obviously, information will change a little, but that is the main goal. And I think one of the things that doctors end up not doing is asking patients enough about their wellness habits and what are you eating. I mean, we do ask about smoking, we ask about alcohol, but that's about the limit of it. We don't ask about eating or exercising or sleeping, much less social relations. I think most doctors, the evidence is that most doctors do not rank social relationship as important to health, but it turns out again, the most important thing, more important than, you know, exercise and the others. And so I think One of the things we need to do is to figure out how we can do that survey, maybe have patients fill out a survey beforehand so we can target what we say and focus on the most important elements. As I mentioned, you know, there are really four things you need to think about for food. Of course, there's many more, and it's the longest chapter in the book because food is rich and there's a lot to talk about. But, you know, if you focus on ultra-processed foods, sodas, fermented food, and fiber, you get people going in the right direction, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Lynn and I both wear those Oura rings, you know?
Yes.
And they're fun because it kind of makes like this, whatever biohacking you might be engaged in, it gives you some feedback in a very direct way. You can look at your chart, see how you've been sleeping. You can look how many steps you've done in a day. Is this something we should be encouraging people to share with their doctors? Because there's a lot of information there.
I think the world is divided into two types of people. One of me is like, you know, I don't need that. And the numbers don't help me. And one is like you and my wife, which is, oh, those numbers are actually quite helpful. I always joke with her. I said, well, you know, that's why you went to MIT, because numbers really motivate you. But the fact is, I don't think they help that much. And they can create a lot of anxiety about, oh, I'm not meeting my numbers. And I've often thought about the wearing an Oura ring for sleep. And it's like, so I wake up in the morning, I feel great, right? My Oura ring says I didn't have a good night. Which am I going to believe, right? And yeah. There was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about super sleepers or competitive sleepers, I think they're called. And they say, yes, they wear their Oura ring. They wear all the rigmarole because they want to get the data. But they never look at the data the next day because they don't want it to distort and make them anxious. So why are you collecting the data? It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, it can go the opposite way too, though, where you wake up, you feel a little groggy, but your sleep score is an 87. So you're like, well, it must be fine. I can just knock it out today. So I guess it really it depends a lot on if you feel it's helping you or not. So don't let it bring you down.
Yes, and we can have a lot of this underlying anxiety, especially if we focus in on it, and that may not be good for being well.
Sure. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're talking with Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel about his new book, Eat Your Ice Cream, Six Simple Rules for a Long and Healthy Life. You talk in your book about longevity. For so many years, especially in Western culture, it's always been about extending the life. How much should we be examining the balance of the quality of life versus the length of life?
So when I asked crowds, I said, so are you interested in quality of life or quantity of life? Almost everyone says quality of life. And then, as you point out, it subtly changes to quantity because they're not sure about quality. And the fact is that every year the CDC announces, you know, life expectancy is going up, going down, whatever, emphasizing quantity, not quality. Because in fact, the actual disability adjusted life years has been getting larger. You've got more disability and less health as people get older. It is important for people to recognize we have more people living into their 90s. We have more people living into their hundreds as centenarians, but the top hasn't moved, has not budged. And yes, you know, 40% of your listeners are going to live into their late 80s and 90s. Important to take good care of your body so it works for you. But the body does have an inevitable deterioration. And the idea that it doesn't and we're going to reverse it, I think, is one of these pipe dreams. So there's a article I found from 1909 in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that says, scientists tells us that we will be able to live to 150 and 200 years. We've always had this idea we're going to live longer, longer, longer. I don't think that's realistic. And it has been, you know, the fountain of youth. People have been chasing it. I think it's much more realistic to say, all right, I'm going to have 85, 90 years. How am I going to maximize and make sure that it's healthy and I forestall the deteriorations? You're not going to get rid of them, and you're going to have to accommodate yourselves to them. I think that's part of maturing and growing old. We know muscle mass decreases after 60. We know that at 75, the cognitive decline rate increases a lot. We're just not able to do the same kind of things. And if you don't believe me, look at a five-year-old and their flexibility, and then look at your flexibility, even if you're doing yoga every single day. My five-year-old granddaughter is way more flexible than I, and she didn't do any yoga. And that's just the way the life goes. And I think you're 100% right. The emphasis ought to be on quality of life, maintaining your health, healthiness as long as possible. And that's what the six habits and behaviors I recommend really do if you integrate them into your life.
Yeah. We have a lot of folks who move to Park City. It's a ski town. It's in the mountains. It's beautiful. Our weather's terrific. And they're moving here later in life. Maybe they're retired and suddenly arriving without much of a social structure. You emphasize how important that social life is. Do you have any recommendations for people who later in life are trying to make friends or forge, you know, relationships around them, even as they hold on to their old relationships from earlier in life?
I think that's an incredibly important issue. First of all, one of the ways is to embrace casual conversations, casual meetings. A second is get to know your neighbors. One of the things that actually happens is the number of Americans who know their neighbors has gone way down. Just introduce yourselves, invite them over for a meal, you know, do a potluck, join some clubs, book clubs, gardening clubs, ski clubs, hiking clubs, get to know other people, invite them over for dinner, share things. Those are the ways you're going to find friends. And I think, as you point out, they're not coming to you willy-nilly. You're going to have to be proactive about it. View it as a wellness activity. View it as like a prescription. If you enjoy people, and you should enjoy people, you have to go out and actually proactively engage them.
As well as being an oncologist and a health policy expert, thank you for your work on the Affordable Care Act, by the way.
Thank you.
You work at the University of Pennsylvania as a vice provost and professor. What are you seeing in the health habits of young people these days that is most concerning or most encouraging?
You see, I have no hair. So partially on that, I have banned cell phones and computers in my classroom to both make students focus on the lecture, but also to begin talking to each other when they get into the classroom, because I think that's so critical. And we know that cell phones distract. Second, you know, my research assistants are a good example. They often survive on a fast casual food, and I berate them constantly, and I've given them recipes. I invite them over for dinner to show them what real cooking and healthy cooking is like. One of the problems of relying on a lot of store-bought food is that you don't control the ingredients. You don't necessarily control how much salt's added, how much sugar's added, what it's composed of. And that's a real problem. That's one of the reasons I actually like to cook, is I know what's going into the meals. And, you know, one of my standard practices, I'm a big baker, I love to bake, is I typically only add half the sugar because I find most recipes too sugary, and I've tried to dial down the amount of sugar I consume. And the other thing we know from the data is that students, young adults, are having a harder time making friends. How to engage people is a social skill we learn from others. And I think one of the consequences of COVID, but also one of the consequences of ubiquitous phones, is we actually are losing that skill rapidly, and you have to cultivate it. It's like almost everything related to wellness, use it or lose it, whether it's your muscles or your mind or your social skills. And I think that is one of the big tragedies I'm seeing among younger people, is the fact that they don't know how to make friends. They don't know how to engage people. And we see this in the data, less dating, less sex, and things like that. It is a problem.
Our time has gone so quickly. We've been talking with Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel about his new book, Eat Your Ice Cream, Six Simple Rules for a Long and Healthy Life. And they are simple. The approaches are approachable. The nice thing about this book is that you can pick it up and it doesn't feel like, oh boy, here we go. I have to do this and this and this. You can take it at whatever level you want and to the depth that you're able at that moment. If there's one thing that you'd like our listeners to start with from your recommendations, what would be the thing you suggest that they do first?
Invite people over for a meal. Social life plus good cooking plus good conversation and intellectual engagement. You hit the wellness trifecta.
Fantastic. Thank you, doctor, so much for being with us on The Mountain Life.
It's great. Thank you for having me.